Continuing, Canto 6, chapter 16, text number 40. Text number 40, is that right?
Yeah,
we did that, yep. So. Oh, a lot of pollen. Yeah, a lot of pollen.
Yeah.
So, here are the prayers. Yeah, so these are the prayers of Chitrakechin when he saw Natasesha or Sankarshan. O unconquerable one, when you spoke about Bhagavad Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system for achieving the shelter of your lotus feet, that was your victory. Persons who have no material desires, like the Kumaras, who are self-satisfied sages, worship you to be liberated from material contamination. In other words, they accept the process of Bhagavad Dharma to achieve shelter at your lotus feet. So we may remember in the description that when the Lord appeared before Chitraketu, he was accompanied by personalities such as the four Kumaras who were worshipping him. And of course, among many personalities who are in touch with the personality of Godhead, the Kumaras are sons of Brahma and Brahmacharis, and therefore regarded in a very elevated position. The Kumaras were born before Narada, but still, because they, because Narada Muni is particularly empowered to preach Bhagavad Dharma, in that sense he's considered superior. There's a verse Srila Prabhupada quotes in this purport from the Bhakti Samri to Sindhu. Anya bilasara sunyam gena kamadhyana brittam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti ruttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favourably and without desires for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation, and that is called pure devotional service. So that is a definition of pure devotional service. And then he quotes this next verse from the Narada Pancharatra, which is also a definition of devotional service. Sarvopadi vinaya muktam tatparat vena niyamalam rishikesha shevanam bhakti ruchite. One should be free from all material designations and cleansed of all material contamination. Should be restored to his pure identity, in which he engages his senses in the service of the proprietor of the senses, and that is called devotional service. So that is Bhagavad Dharma. Prabhupada mentions that by understanding Bhagavad Dharma, one immediately becomes free from material contaminations. The And the living entities are instructed by the Lord himself about Bhagavatam, and they adopt it. That is victory for the Lord, for he then reclaims these fallen souls. The devotee following the principles of Bhagavatam feels very much obliged to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can understand the difference between life without Bhagavatam and life with Bhagavatam, and thus he ever remains obliged to the Lord. Taking to Krishna consciousness and bringing fallen souls to Krishna consciousness is victory for Lord Krishna. And of course, one final verse Prabhupada quotes, Savai pum samparodam o yato bhakti rad hoksaje ahoy chakiya patiyata yatma supersidity. The supreme occupation of Dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Therefore, that's from Bhagavatam 126. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is a pure, transcendental process of religion. So, Narada Muni, here, Chitraketu has explained that the Lord, Sankishan, he speaks about Bhagavatam to such personalities as the Kumaras and who worship him. Because of that, and accept the process of Bhagavatam, and they gain association with his lotus feet, and the definitions of Bhagavatam are given here, that they're executed without any motivation at all. That's from the Narada Pancharatrika. Of the grosser subtle, they're executed in a favourable way to Krishna. They're executed with realisation of one's eternal identity as the eternal servant of the Lord, and that the Lord himself is a personality with transcendental senses who reciprocates when we use our senses in his service. So these are very nice definitions of pure devotional service, those three verses. And then Prabhupada confirms, what is the Srimad Bhagavatam? That is that same science of Bhagavatam as confirmed in Bhagavatam 126. The same thing is saying. It is unmotivated, and the symptom of someone's service being unmotivated is that it's uninterrupted. And when that service is unmotivated and uninterrupted, then it is pure devotional service, and that will completely satisfy the self. And that is the science being taught in Srimad Bhagavatam. So then he goes on to say that, and of course there is a disciplic succession of Srimad Bhagavatam coming down from Lord Ananta Sesha, and the Kumaras also, they accepted devotional service, they accepted, they heard Bhagavatam, it's Bhagavatam through Hamsa Avatar. You know, there are four sampradayas. And each sampradaya, the Bhagavatam is coming down from Narayan. So Brahma was personally instructed by Narayan. Lakshmi is also the servant of Narayan directly. Lord Shiva is considered the greatest Vaishnava of Narayan. And Lord Narayan appeared as a Hamsa avatar and instructed the four Kumaras. So it's coming from Narayan. And the four sampradayas are directly related with practically the direct associates of Lord Narayan. And of course, the four Kumaras also went to Vaikuntha and did have that audience with Narayan there as well. being full of contradictions, all forms of religion, but Bhagavad Dham, that means anything which is, you know, Bhagavad Dham is coming from Narayan himself, and it's free from, but being full of contradictions, all forms of religion, but Bhagavad Dham, in other words, except Bhagavad Dham, work under conceptions of fruit of act results and distinctions of you and I, yours and mine. The followers of Srimad Bhagavatam have no such consciousness. They are all Krishna conscious, thinking that they are Krishna's and Krishna is theirs. There are other low-class religious systems which are contemplated for the killing of enemies, for the gain of mystic power, but such religious systems, being full of passion and envy, are impure and temporary. Because they are full of envy, they are full of irreligion. So many religious systems also include different concessions for irreligiosity. So therefore there's contradictions within those religious systems. Yeah.
I think this is my opinion. Because this, as it says, it's full of irreligion, these religious principles, because they are the three modes, isn't it? It's not
that's
beyond,
right.
It's not beyond the three modes, like.
Yeah, there's some. Either so, there's a conception of I am the body, or. You know, working on the mental or intellectual platform like that. Yeah. Or even if they accept that I am Brahman, they still haven't accepted the fact that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. So the pure spiritual identity hasn't manifested. And therefore they can't engage their senses in the service of Hrishikesh, which is what bhakti is, because they don't acknowledge that they have spiritual senses, nor that the Lord has spiritual senses, so they can't fulfill the, you know, the criteria of pure devotional service. So, yeah, so, and that Bhagavad Dham, you know, pure devotional service, as Prabhupada says in the purport, Bhagavad Dham means following the orders given by the Supreme Lord Bhagavan, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvada Mampari Yagyam Mam Vikam Saranam Brajam. God is one, God is for everyone, therefore must surrender to God. That is the pure conception of religion. Whatever God orders, constitutes religion. In Bhagavad Dham, there's no question of what you believe and what I believe. Everyone must believe in the Supreme Lord and carry out his orders. And according to Krishna and Shilanam, whatever Krishna says, whatever God says should be directly carried out. This is Dharma religion. So, religion is one. Ultimately, you know, although people think that there are many different types of religion, actually there is only one. God is one, religion is one. You can't really say that to people. Although they like to, you know, quite often, you know, there are impersonalist groups from India. You know, religion is one, God is one, one mantra. But when they say it, they mean it in an impersonal way, in an offensive way. You know, when we say God is one, we understand that the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, is one, and all religion is coming from him. When they say it, they say that there is no Bhagavan, there is no personality with transcendental senses, and nor are there separate living entities with transcendental senses, that, you know, God is impersonal, And in this world, he has manifested, you know, that one God. Because God is one, therefore he's in Ganesh, he's in Durga, he's in Kali, he's in you, he's in me. Because they don't accept the personality of God. When they say God is one, they accept it in an impersonal way, that that one God is manifested within all the demigods, so they are equally God. So if God is one, then Ganesh is just as much God as Krishna. And you are just as much God, and I am just as much God. So they say it, when they say it, it's a very offensive. When we say it, we're referring to Bhagavan, it's correct. And the difference is this, that if God is one, see, this is where you catch out the contradictions, right? They say, this is where you catch the contradictions. God is one. And they say, yes, God is one. He's in Shiva. He's in Krishna. So we're following Shiva. He's one with Krishna. What is the difference? Then, if God is one, and you accept that he's as much in Shiva as he is in Krishna, why do you not follow what Krishna says in the Gita and fully surrender unto him? That means you actually don't accept God as one. Yeah? In other words, if you can accept any of the teachings as one, because God is one, why not accept Krishna? Why do you reject Krishna's teachings? That's a contradiction. If God is just as much in Krishna as he is in Shiva and Ganesh, why will you not follow Krishna's instruction? Why will you not even read his Gita? So that's a contradiction. So therefore, you're not even following your own religion. Is it? Okay, so that's cheating. It's a philosophy which is, you know, designed to avoid surrender. The way they present it, the way they present God as one, is directly, you know, manipulated to avoid surrendering to Krishna. When it's said properly, you can't but avoid surrendering to Krishna. So there's the contradiction. That's the contradiction which underlies all other contradictions. That's where you catch them out. That's where Prabhupada catch them out. It's cheating. Someone says, yeah, there are two authorities, you know, you go to a workplace. You say, in this workplace there are two bosses, and they're both equally the boss. And if someone says, well, yeah, I accept that, but I'll only accept instruction from him, not him. I accept him as equal, but I'm never going to listen to that one. So then you don't accept. Oh, no, I accept.
Or if you turn around and say, but you're not accepting the instructions of Shiva or
Shiva says that once Shiva actually wears the Ganges water on his head to indicate that everyone should take the dust of Krishna on his head. A Vishnu, Narayan. Why did they not accept? And you can ask, this is one of my favourite questions to Shivites. I say, you know, how many generations you've been worshipping? Oh, we go back thousands of years worshipping Shiva. Oh, yes. You study, my mother, my grandmother, they studied it. I say, you answer me one question. Who does Shiva meditate upon? Oh. And they don't know. So for thousands of years, generation after generation, they follow Lord Shiva. You ask them a simple question. Who's he meditating upon? No idea. The Ganges water on his head shows that he is worshipping Vishnu, the Tattva, the Vishnu Tattva. He is accepting that dust on his head. That is the lotus feet he is worshipping. And the snakes indicate Ananta, Sankarshan, And unto Sesha, he is worshipping Sankusha. That's why he wears the snakes. It is a symbol of Sankusha. So if you want to follow Lord Shiva, you accept what he's doing. And so, you know, and then, you know, they realize they're being caught out. But even then, after being caught out, they'll find some sneaky way, because to avoid surrendering to Krishna, that is the purpose. That is a contradiction. Prabhupada says here, if one is actually Krishna consciousness, he cannot have any enemies. Since his only engagement is to induce others to surrender to Krishna or God, how can he have enemies? If one advocates the Hindu religion, the Muslim religion, the Christian religion, this religion or that religion, there will be conflicts. History shows. So in other words, if you're teaching surrender to God, you won't have enemies. So when you meet a Christian, you teach him how to surrender to God through Christianity. You meet a Muslim, you teach him how to surrender to God through Muslim religion. But if you're advocating not surrender to God but become a Christian, you'll create enemies. History shows that the followers of religious systems without a clear conception of God have fought with one another. There are many instances of this in human history, but systems of religion that do not concentrate upon service to the Supreme as temporary and cannot last for long because they are full of envy. So there, in that sentence, Prabhupada is predicting the fall, the demise and the disappearance of Christianity, the Muslim religion. These religions would disappear because of the envy that is there within them. So that is the history of this world. There are many activities directed against such religious systems, and therefore one must give up the idea of my belief and your belief. Everyone should believe in God and surrender unto him. That is Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma is not a concocted sectarian belief, for it entails research to find how everything is connected with Krishna. Ishavasyam vidam sarvam. According to the Vedic injunction, Savam Kalvidam Brahma, Brahman, the Spirit, is present in everything. Bhagavad Dharma captures this presence of the Supreme. Bhagavad Dharma does not consider everything in the world to be false, because everything emanates from the Supreme. Nothing can be false. Everything has some use in the service of the Supreme. For example, we are now dictating into a microphone and recording on a dictaphone machine, and thus we are finding how the machine can be connected to the Supreme Brahman. Since we are using this machine in the service of the Lord, it is Brahman. This is the meaning, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is Brahman, because everything can be used for the service of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is mithya, false. Everything is factual. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, you see that verse that, the material energy is eternal. The living entities, what's that? We've got a Bhagavad Gita, just that verse in the first few verses of the 13th chapter. Yeah, what's that saying? What's the translation?
The offering of the sacrifice, the offering of everything is spiritual.
No, describing that the material energy itself is eternal, and the living entities are, I forget the word exactly. Yeah, you got to get anyone.
Yeah,
find that translation. And I'll just read on while you get that. Bhagavad Dharma is called Sarvad Krishta, the best of all religious systems, because those who follow Bhagavad Dharma are not envious of anyone. Pure Bhagavatas, pure devotees invite everyone without envy to join the Krishna consciousness movement. A devotee is therefore exactly like the Supreme Personality of God. It's Suridam Savabhutanam. He is a friend to all living entities. Therefore, this is the best of all religious systems. Whereas so-called religions are meant for a particular type of person who believes in a particular way, such discrimination has no place in Krishna consciousness or Bhagavad Dham. So we invite everyone. The atheists, the Buddhists, the Muslims, we invite everyone, no discrimination. If we scrutinise religious systems meant for worship of demigods or anyone else, but the Supreme Person of God, we will find they're full of envy and therefore impure. Yeah, that the material nature is eternal. The living entities,
both are eternal.
Yeah.
Just material nature and the living entities should be understood to be the beginningless.
Beginningless, yeah.
Their transformations and the modes of material.
That's it.
Products of material nature.
Their transformations. Their transformations are products. So, you know. When the living entities accept different material bodies, so for instance, there's a transformation. So, you know, I'm now in a man's body, I'm in a woman's body, I'm in a Hindu, Australian. You know, they're transformations of the living entity appearing, you know, to transform from one body to another. So, they're products of the material energy, but the living entity and the material nature themselves are eternal. So we accept... Because it's eternal, therefore we can't take it as false. It's one of Krishna's eternal energy, so you can't accept it as false. But the material body you can accept as false because it's only temporally manifested. It has no existence in the past. So this body that I have now, you know, as you go back in the past, I was like had a little baby's body. You know, this man's body here, you know, wasn't there. Even day by day, all the atoms are changing. Even as I'm sitting here, you know, it's transforming in front of you. But we don't see it. In the future, it will not be here like that. So therefore, like a dream, which we read previously, that was the living entity when he came back to life, he was preaching like that. As like a dream, you know, a dream begins. Before you go to sleep and dream, the dream wasn't there. When you wake up, the dream's not there. In the middle, it's there, so therefore it's considered false because it's temporary. The body is like in that category, but the material energy is not. It's always there. It's always, you know, there. It's always an energy of the Lord.
So is it just inert and then manifest and then unmanifest, or is it how do we lose
each other? Yeah, sometimes he... sets loose that energy for material creation, and sometimes he withdraws it, you know, within himself. But it's there to use, you know, as it, like anger. Prabhupada gives the example of anger. You know, anger's there. I can use it now and get angry. Why are you late? You know, it's there. If I want, I can let it go. If it wasn't there, you know. If it was otherwise, I couldn't draw on it. If it wasn't there. It's there, right within me. But I don't, you know, I don't use it. I use it as I want. The material energy is like that. It's there within Krishna always.
Is there a very thin line between false and temporary in that case? Because many a times they tend to overlap. How do we kind of just separate that?
Yeah, it's illusory, but. It's not false in the sense that it's not real because it's an eternal energy, but you can say it's false in the sense that the transformations or the products of the material energy are false. You can say like that, that, you know, the material energy transforms into various products, different living entities and so many different things, they're false because they're temporarily manifest and they disappear. But the material energy itself is not false. So this body, you know, you can say is false in the sense that it's, but because it's a manifestation of material energy, which is real, means there's something I can derive from the reality aspect of it. And what can I derive? I can use this material body to become Krishna conscious and attain my eternal life. So there's a real eternal benefit which can be derived from the material energy. You know? Something which is completely false, you can't really derive anything from it. But because it's real, you can actually derive an eternal benefit and regain your spiritual life. So you can't say it's false because you're getting that eternal benefit from it. But you try and get happiness from this body, that's false. You won't get it. That's mental concoction. So, yeah. And what number was that verse? 30,
20. 30. 30.
20th verse. And there's another contradiction. When the impersonalists say everything is one, they say this world is false. And therefore, again, they're contradicting the Bhagavad Gita. See? Which means that if they're saying that, yes, God is one, the teachings of Lord Shiva are equal to the teachings of Krishna, then they must accept the teachings of Krishna as much as they accept Shiva because God is one, and yet they're disregarding his teachings that the material energy is not false. So many contradictions they have. So when you say God is one, you can only correctly use that phrase by accepting God as Bhagavan. But if you say God is one without accepting the principle of Bhagavan, then it's cheating and offensive, and your philosophy would be full of contradictions. Text number 42. How can a religious system that produces... So these are really, you know, this purport, text number 41, it's full of some very... You can imagine other different religious groups reading that. It'd terrify them, especially if they know how popular the Christian... You know, they're really being exposed there. But how can they argue against it? Because their whole history is war and envy. And exactly as Prabhupada said, just like in they had the Crusades. There were groups of those who even accepted Christianity, but also maintained that, whereas you can also meditate and directly experience God. But, Christians are opposed to that concept. And they also accepted reincarnation. They're opposed to that as well. And so in France, there was I forget the name of them. It was ordained by the Pope that the Crusaders would go there and destroy them. And they went through village by village in France, and they killed every man, woman, child, and even their animals. And they went to the next village, and they killed every man, woman, child, and animals like that, because there was a difference in what they were accepting compared to what was accepted by them. So it's not only you're not invited to our church, but we're going to kill you and your children who don't even follow any philosophy. And yet dogs, who are not even interested in religion at all. So So that's their history. So how can they argue? What are they going to say? And we say you're Christian, Muslim, Hindu, you know, come to the temple, happy shah, chant, dance, you know, if you want to hear the philosophy here, otherwise go, come back for the next feast. How can a religious system that produces envy of oneself and of others be beneficial for oneself and for them? Such a simple statement. What is auspicious about following such a symptom? What is actually to be gained by causing pain to one's own self due to self-envy, and by causing pain to others, one arouses your anger and practices irreligion? There we go. And that, you know, in these couple of verses, we've exposed practically every religion that's, you know, on the face of this earth at the moment, apart from Bhagavad Dharma. No wonder they're so determined. You know, it's like in, you know, some of those Baltic countries where, you know, the Hare Krishna's been preaching over so many years. The Orthodox Christians would organise the local thugs and mafiosi and what have you to come out with knuckle dusters and knives and iron bars and literally attack and beat the hell out of the men and women, Hare Krishnas, who were trying to do kirtan. That was organised by the Christian priests. There was a lot of power. Of course, this tendency to of envy even if sometimes, you know, the people of various religions are able to somehow manifest some sort of equanimity to human beings, although they may be of different faiths, they really struggle with animals. You know,
but Prabhu, even devotees experience envy. And yes, and our goal is to become free of envy by developing love for Krishna. But devotees are also envious. Other religious systems could argue that our teachings, we don't teach envy, but our followers are misunderstanding.
We're certainly not the scriptures. Our scriptures do not teach us to be envious. Our leaders, you know, who properly follow, do not teach us to be envious. I think it's in the Nectar of Instruction. Prabhupada mentions that there is no room for envy in this Krishna consciousness movement. I think I read that once before here, right? I read that purport from Prabhupada's Nectar of Instruction, How to Associate with Devotees. And he says there very clearly, there is no room for envy in this Krishna consciousness movement. So certainly, our Krishna consciousness movement means we follow Prabhupada's teachings, who is the, you know, gives the proper explanation of Bhagavad Dharma. Of the highest level, without fault. And he says there's no room for envy in this Krishna consciousness movement. So if one of our you know, our leaders, generally, they're not teaching envy. If some of them are, that is, to that degree, their disqualification as a leader, isn't it?
What I also meant was other religious systems could also say that our teachings are not teaching envy, but the followers are not following properly.
Those followers are generally neophytes. Generally neophytes, but as we saw with the Gaudiya Math, who actually became envious of Prabhupada, it does happen in leadership, and that's what I was saying. There was no envy in Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there's no envy in Prabhupada, and those who are actually following Bhakti Siddhanta or Prabhupada, those who actually followed Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati did not become envious or gave up little traces of envy they may have had. Those who are following Prabhupada also do not allow envy to, you know, come into their devotional service. But you are correct that, you know, sometimes, even within leadership positions, what to speak of those who, you know, have much less purification, so especially in devotees that may have only been around for 20 years. You know, devotees, especially, you know, if they're untrained, you know, you can be in this movement for 20 years, seriously, and still be struggling with envy, you know. That was a good thing about the early days. You know, a lot of that was really knocked out of you, you know, in a loving way, but in quite a strong way, very quickly, you know. They just say to you, you know, they just say to you, don't be envious. You're being envious. You know, that's why you're doing that. They'll just say straight out. You can't say that to anyone these days. They won't, because of the envy, they won't accept anyone as a senior devotee to them. So you can't give them instruction. But you can't, there you just can't say it straight out. That's envious, even when you see it. You know, previously you just said it straight out. It was very easy, you know, and they would accept it. You knocked it out of them pretty quick.
Prabhu, when you mentioned teaching envy, I don't understand. Is there an example? Like, how would anybody teach envy? Does it happen here? Teaching, irregular teaching envy.
Mm-hmm.
What does that actually mean? Leaders teaching envy or...
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when someone's in a leadership position, I mean, generally they're trying to, you know, if there's some envy in them and yet they can't help but act on that, they may have an understanding that I better guise that envy and cover it up as if I'm, you know, or at least try and convince myself and others that somehow this is, I'm doing this as a favourable activity of devotional service to Krishna. So they may have a sense that it's actually, there's some envy. Just like, say if you have someone in leadership position and if other devotees that are within their jurisdiction start to develop leadership qualities, which is very much appreciated by the congregation, that envy may manifest and they may try to purposely avoid that those personalities from having any significant position within the temple. They may exclude them from all, you know, managerial sort of, you know, engagements. They may spread rumours about that person, which are false. They may hear rumours about that person, knowing they're false, and not, you know, do anything to stop it. And they may even sometimes openly, you know, show aggression to such personalities. So that's envy. Now, what younger devotees do is they see, gee, they really got away with just stamping on that devotee's head. So it seems like, you know, I could probably get away with it too, especially if I'm envious of the same people that management's envious of. So, you know, they learn pretty quick. Verse number 43. My dear Lord, one's occupation or duty is instructed in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita according to your viewpoint. A point of view, which never deviates from the highest goal of life. Those who are following their occupational duties under your supervision, being equal to all living entities, moving and non-moving, and not considering high and low, are called Aryans. Such Aryans worship you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here is a very big description of the Aryan civilization. Who is Aryan? Who is following the Lord and who is not? Bhagavatam and Krishna Katha are identical, Prabhupada starts out. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to become a guru and preach the instructions of Krishna everywhere, from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Puranas, Vedanta Sutra and similar Vedic literatures. So that there's an interesting statement in itself. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Puranas, you know, so we cite the Puranas and we read them and study them. Vedanta Sutra, you know, Prabhupada mentions that, you know, we should study the commentaries of the Vedanta Sutra and what have you by the various acharyas and, you know, preach from that. You know, these things are there. Of course, if one has a proper understanding of the Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, then one can study those other things in correlation to that. It's not advised to study other things in Prabhupada's books or, you know, writings from, you know, authorised ISKCON devotees until one gets those things under their belt properly. You know, then other things can be, you know, added to that, and you keep the proper perspective. If someone doesn't get a proper understanding of Prabhupada's books and studies other things, even ISKCON books, prematurely they can get a misunderstanding. Best fix up in Prabhupada's book first, then anything else added after that. Aryans who are advanced in civilization follow Bhagavad Dham. He quotes Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj preached Bhagavad Dham among his classmates as soon as an opportunity was afforded, or the absence of his teachers from the classroom. And he said that it should be instructed from the age of five, because human life is so rare. Bhagavad Dham means living according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita we find that the Supreme Lord has arranged human society in four social divisions. Again, the Puranas and other Vedic literature set forth four ashrams, which are the divisions of spiritual life. Therefore, Bhagavad Dham means Varnashram Dham, and the four social, of the four social and four spiritual orders. So if someone rejects the Varnashram system, which most Hindus do, they're not Aryans. Because a lot of Hindus reject Varnashram because the caste system has really turned them off that whole system. Like that. You know, the current caste system causes so many problems that they reject the whole Varnashram system altogether. The members of human society who strictly follow the principles of Bhagavad Dham and live according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called Aryans or Arya. Such civilized men do not discriminate between trees, animals, human beings, and other living entities. You know, therefore, Aryans are vegetarian. So, those involved in killing for the satisfaction of the tongue, they can't claim to be Aryan. All living entities have a right to live, even the trees and plants. This is the basic principle of an Aryan civilization. So you imagine that one principle there being one of the guiding pillars of the leaders of any country. One of the main things that they follow. So who's our politician? Mr. Turnbull. So if Mr. Turnbull or, you know, President Obama followed this principle, all living entities, even the trees and plants, have a right to live. Imagine the massive changes that would have to take place immediately. Now, apart from the lower living entities, those who have come to the platform of human civilization should be divided into a society of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras. The Brahmanas should follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as stated in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures. The criteria must be guna and karma. In other words, one should acquire the qualities of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Sudra and act accordingly. This is the civilization accepted by the Aryans. Why do they accept it? They accept it because they are very much eager to satisfy Krishna. This is perfect civilization. Aryans do not deviate from the instructions of Krishna, nor do they have doubts about Krishna, but non-Aryans and other demoniac people fail to follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. This is because they have been trained in sense gratification at the cost of all other living entities. So, you know, they don't say that. They don't say, we don't follow Gita, we follow some other scripture. And they say, because that's our family tradition, or, you know, that's what they do in our village, or, this is our belief. But what they won't admit is the real reason is that because they've been trained in sense gratification at the cost of other living entities. And that is actually, you know, that's where you catch them out. That's really what you've got to get them to admit eventually to themselves for them to actually progress. When they can admit that to themselves, that actually, why am I following something which, you know, for most, from what I've seen, most children of Christians or Hindus or Muslims find that what their parents and forefathers are following are full of contradictions and hypocrisies. But they'll still follow it. They'll follow anything but Krishna consciousness, let's put it that way, because the opportunity to fulfill their sense gratification at the cost of living entities is there, and therefore they'll still raise that, they'll raise that flag. Oh, I'm a Christian. But that's the real reason. Otherwise, why they give it up? You know, you talk to any of them, like they'll tell you, freely admit there's so many hypocrisies, we don't really accept it, but that's their family tradition. But, oh, why don't you take the Krishna consciousness? Oh, no, I'm a Christian. Well, why do you keep following it? Full of hypocrisies and that. Then they've got to admit, because my sense gratification lies there, that I can, you know, at the cost of other living entities, I can enjoy sense gratification under that banner, and therefore I won't take to Krishna consciousness. Their only business is to indulge in all kinds of forbidden activities for sense gratification. They deviate in this way because they want to gratify the senses. They have no other occupation or ambition. So Prabhupada really is not, you know, pulling his punches there. They actually have no other occupation to satisfy the senses, the mind and the senses. Their method of civilization is condemned in the previous verse. What is the meaning of a civilization that kills oneself and others? Actually, this verse therefore advises that everyone become a member of the Aryan civilization and accept the instructions of the personality of Godhead. One should conduct his social, political and religious affairs according to his instructions. We are spreading the Krishna consciousness movement to try and establish a society the way that Krishna wants it. This is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. We are therefore presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is by kicking out all kinds of mental concoction. Fools and rascals interpret Bhagavad Gita in their own way. When Krishna says, Man mana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam namaskaru, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me, they comment that it is not Krishna to whom we may surrender. Thus they derive imaginary meanings from Bhagavad Gita. So therefore they, as we said, that impersonal concept. This, when Krishna says, surrender unto me, you know, it's not actually Krishna, it's the Brahman within Krishna, who's within Shiva, therefore you can follow him as well, or Ganesh, or, you know, this Babaji, or that one there, Sai Baba, this or that or the other. So they say, yes, we accept Bhagavad Gita. Yes, we follow the teachings of Krishna. We are Krishna's bhakta. We have surrendered to Krishna. And that Brahman that is within Krishna is within Sai Baba, and we are accepting we are surrendering to Krishna through Sai Baba. And to do that, we disregard all the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. We don't follow Varnasram. We never think of the form of Krishna. We don't accept Prasadam like this. And this is why we surrender to Krishna. We are fully surrendered to Krishna. Fully surrendered. Thus they derive many imaginary meanings from Bhagavad Gita. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, strictly follows Bhagavad Dham, the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam for the complete welfare of human society. One who misinterprets Bhagavad Gita, twisting out some meaning for his sense gratification, is a non-Aryan. Therefore, commentaries on Bhagavad Gita by such persons should immediately be rejected. One should try to follow Bhagavad Gita as it is. My wife likes saying that every time we do a ceremony, you know, I like to ask, you know, have you read Bhagavad Gita? And they say, oh, yes, 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 yes. And my wife, without fail, she'd go, Bhagavad Gita as it is. And I go, oh, yes, 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 yes. And she'll hold up the book. Have you read this book, Bhagavad Gita as it is, with Prabhupada's purpose? No, 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 no. So, Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita 12:6-7. For one who worships me, giving up all his activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, who has fixed his mind upon me, O son of Pritha, for him I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Any comments or questions or experiences, you know, in your preaching
even Aryans, they are taken as a caste instead of actually Aryans. Anybody can be an Aryan as long as he sticks to Bhagavad Dharma.
That's right.
But yeah. Even that is that is also taken as a caste.
It's taken as by birth, that's right. Yeah.
Birth or caste or whatever, this is Aryan.
Yeah.
What it means, that's what I came across.
That's right, yeah.
So, it's like a caste system.
An Indian caste. Part, yeah.
Yes, Indian caste.
Yeah. So you have to be Indian and you have to be part of that caste. Do they accept non-Indians in that caste?
Some people say because Germans have that same swastika. Signs, so they say even Germans, some Germans can be
Aryans. So
it's all concocted.
But it is, yeah. Some Germans, what, like Nazi Germans? They were the ones with the swastika.
Yeah, those kind of people.
Prabhu, I just want to share what I'm reading in one of the Prabhupada's books.
Yes.
Prabhupada mentions one should hear Krishna Katha from a proper authority with a submissive state of mind.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And therefore, you know, we're hearing from Prabhupada. As Prabhupada said in his previous verses here, that he's speaking this through the dictaphone. So Prabhupada actually spoke this. And in essence, we're hearing, you know, it's through Prabhupada, because he actually spoke this these purports like that. So we're hearing through Prabhupada, and therefore we get the real thing. That's correct. Others we shouldn't hear from. Any other comments or questions? So, text number 44. My Lord, it is not impossible for one to be immediately freed from all material contamination by seeing you. Not to speak of seeing you personally, merely by hearing the holy name of your Lordship only once. Even Chandalas, men of the lowest class, are freed from all material contamination. Under the circumstances, who will not be freed from material contamination simply by seeing you? Yes. So. So as Prabhupada quotes from Harinama, 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 Evi Kivalam. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is the chanting of the holy name. There is no other way, there is no other way. So that was introduced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago. And Prabhupada mentions that through the Krishna consciousness movement, the Hare Krishna movement, we're actually seeing that men who are considered to be the lowest class are being delivered from all sinful activities simply by hearing the holy name of the Lord. To stop the suffering of material existence, one must take to the Hare Krishna movement of Sankirtan or Krishna conscious life. And now Prabhupada says, herein it is said, Yan namas Sakrich Shravanach. The holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so powerful that if once heard without offences, it can purify the lowest of men. Now, quite often, you know, when Prabhupada mentions the potency of the holy name, he does qualify, because these qualifying statements are in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but we may have forgotten them. Such as, you know, the second canto, was it Sukadeva Goswami who mentions that one who chants the holy name of the Lord and his heart does not melt, the heart must be still framed. So way back there, they were saying then there must be offences. So because we forget those things, Prabhupada always reminds us. He mentions, from our present position, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be personally seen as the deity in the temple. The deity of the Lord is not different from the Supreme Lord, but because we cannot see the Supreme Lord with our present blunt eyes, the Lord has kindly consented to come before us in the form we can see. Therefore, the deity in the temple should not be considered material. By offering food to the deity and by decorating and serving the deity, one gets the same result that one derives from seeing the Lord personally in Vaikuntha. It reminds me of talk about seeing the Lord. I had this strange dream last night where I found a Shalagram Sheila and who was Korma. And when I looked at this Shalagram, I picked him up in my hand and I thought, oh, Korma's here. Now all my activities will be supported nicely by Korma. And then as I held him, his little legs and arms come out from the shell and started to, you know, it's like holding the tortoise in your hand, and his head come out as well, like that. And on his back, Lord Vishnu was lying on his back, all decorated with his clothes and holding, you know, the club, the lotus, the conch and the disc, like that. And while I was holding him, my spiritual master came up and he said, "I've got a gift for you, Ganga." And he walked off and he come back and he had a set of the jugya wooden spoons in that. He said, "Because you're doing nice ceremonies, I'm giving you these." Seeing the Lord just reminded me of that, seeing the Lord. But so this is... Bhagavatam means hearing, chanting, remembering, even in sleep. These processes purify even the lowest classes of men. So that is Bhagavatam. These hearing, chanting, remembering, they purify. And we understand from the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially in Kali Yuga, of all the 9 different processes of Bhagavad Dharma, the chanting of the holy name should be prominent. So now we're chanting, we're discussing, I mean there's Krishna on every page, so we're chanting the holy name. But we're also discussing the qualities and pastimes of the Lord and his form and different things like that. But above all, they're also kirtan. So there's Nam kirtan, Guna kirtan, you know, Krishna Guna kirtan, Krishna Rupa kirtan, Krishna Lila kirtan. But especially Nam kirtan should be prominent in every devotee's devotional life. That is in Kali Yuga. That's the Harinam, Harinam, Harinam Eva Kevalam. Therefore, as Prabhupada mentions, I think in the Nectar Instruction again, that of all the devotees' services that they do, the most important is the 16 rounds of that. Therefore, my dear Lord, simply by seeing you has now wiped away all the contamination of sinful activities and their results of material attachment and lusty desires which always filled my mind and the core of my heart. So here's Chitraketu, he's standing, seeing the Lord. Whatever is predicted by the great sage Narada Muni cannot be otherwise. In other words, I have obtained your audience as a result of being trained by Narada Muni. And, you know, this is what you were saying. Sorry, what was your name?
Ravi.
Ravi, yeah. This is Ravi, everyone. He's come to hear our classes. This is what Ravi was saying, that, you know, one must take lessons from authorities like Narada, Vyasa, Sita, you know, following the correct persons here. Then one will be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead even with our own eyes. One only needs training. With our blunt eyes and other senses, we cannot perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but if we engage our senses in the service of the Lord according to the instructions of the authorities, it will be possible to see him. As soon as one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the sinful reactions in the core of one's heart are certainly vanquished. Translation: O unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, whatever a living entity does in this material world is well known to you because you are the Supersoul. In the presence of the sun, there is nothing to be revealed by the light of a glowworm. Similarly, because you know everything, in your presence, there is nothing for me to make known. My dear Lord, you are the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this cosmic manifestation. But persons who are too materialistic and always see separateness do not have eyes with which to see you. They cannot understand your real position, and therefore they conclude that the cosmic manifestation is independent of your opulence. My Lord, you are the supreme pure and you are full of six opulences, therefore I offer my obeisances unto you. They have no eyes by which to see the Lord, but when has love, one can see the Lord. You were telling me that in the courtyard, weren't you? And here it is, saying the same thing again.
You can't see Krishna.
That's right. That's what you said in the courtyard. He was talking with his friend there, and they heard in class this morning. Who gave class? Someone was saying the same point, that you can't see the Supreme Lord, you know, through materialistic ways and, you know, through telescopes and that. You have to have love. And here it's saying the same thing. So, you know, they do not have the eyes to see the Lord because the love is not there. And therefore, although the Supreme Lord is, you know, one who has love can see the Supreme Lord has created, maintained and annihilates everything. And one without that proper vision can't see him anywhere connected in any way. They see everything going on completely independent from him. My dear Lord, it is after your endeavour that Lord Brahma, Indra and other directors of the cosmic manifestation become occupied with their activities. It is after you perceive the material energy, my Lord, that the senses begin to perceive. The Supreme Personality of Godhead holds all the universes on his heads like seeds of mustard. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, that Supreme Personality of Godhead who has thousands of hoods. So he's praying to Sankarshan in his form as Ananta Sesha, the thousands of hoods, holding all the universes on his heads like mustard seeds. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ananta Deva, being very much pleased with the prayers offered by Chitraketu, the king of the Vidyadharas, replied to him as follows, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Maharaj Parikit. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ananta Deva, replied as follows, O king, as a result of your having accepted the instructions spoken about me by the great sages Narada and Angira, you have become completely aware of transcendental knowledge. Because you are now educated in the spiritual science, you have seen me face to face. Therefore, you are now completely perfect. Prabhupada gives this definition. The perfection of life is to be spiritually educated and to understand the existence of the Lord and how he creates, maintains, and annihilates the cosmic manifestation. When you come to that stage, you've reached perfection. When one is perfect in knowledge, he can develop his love of Godhead through the association of such perfect persons as Narada and Angira and the members of their disciplic succession. So here, you know, it describes, you can understand, you can gain spiritual education, but when, you know, that love of Godhead, you know, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, maybe you could read that verse, one who knows that I am the source of all material and spiritual creations worships me.
10:8
is it?
10:8? I'm the source of all spiritual and material world.
Yeah.
Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts.
Yeah, and read the purport loudly.
A learned scholar who has studied the Vedas perfectly and has information from authorities like Lord Chaitanya, and who knows how to apply these teachings, can understand that Krishna is the origin of everything in both the material and spiritual worlds. And because he knows this perfectly, he becomes firmly fixed in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord.
Okay, so one hears, and by that hearing, then they take up devotional service and become fixed up in devotional service. Yeah, read on.
He can never be deviated by any amount of nonsensical commentaries or by fools. All Vedic literature agree that Krishna is the source of Brahma, Shiva and all other demigods. In the Atharva Veda, Gopala Tapani Upanishad 1.24, it is said, Yo Brahmanana Vidadhadi Purvam Yovai Vedamsha Gapayanti Sma Krishna. It was Krishna who in the beginning instructed Brahma in Vedic knowledge and who disseminated Vedic knowledge in the past. Then again, in the Narayana Upanishad, says, Asa Purusho Ha Vai Narayano Kamayata Praja Srijyeta. When the Supreme Personality Narayana decided to create living entities, the Upanishad continued, Narayanada Brahma Jayate Narayanada Prajapati Prajapate Narayanada Indra Jayate Narayana Ashtav Vasavo Jayate Narayana Ekadasha Rudra Jayate Narayana Dvadasha Aditya. From Narayana Brahma is born, and from Narayana the patriarchs are born, from Narayana Indra is born, from Narayana the 8 Vasus are born, from Narayana the 11 Rudras are born, from Narayana the 12 Adityas are born. This Narayana is an expansion of Krishna. It is said in the same Vedas, Brahmanyo Devaki Putra, the son of Devaki, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Narayana Vishnu 4. Then it is said, Eko vai Narayana Asina Brahma, na Ishana, Napo, Nagni Samo, Neme, Dhyaya, Aprathvi, na Nakshatrani, na Surya. In the beginning of the creation, there was only the Supreme Personality Narayana. There was no Brahma, no Shiva, no water, no fire, no moon, no stars in the sky, no sun. Mahavishnu 1. In the Mahavishnu Upanishad, it is also said that Lord Shiva was born from the forehead of the Supreme Lord. Thus, the Vedas say that it is the Supreme Lord, the creator of Brahma and Shiva, who is to be worshipped. In Moksha Dharma, Krishna also says, Prajapati cha rudram chavi aham evam srijami vai tau imam na vijanito mama maya vimohito. The patriarchs, Shiva and others created by me, though they do not know that they are created by me because they are deluded by my illusory energy. In the Varaha Purana, it is also said, Narayana Paro Deva, Tasma Jata Chalsumaraha, Tasma Rudra Abhva Deva, Sacha Sarva Jnatam Gadaha. Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and from him Brahma was born, from whom Shiva was born. Lord Krishna is the source of all generations, and he is called the most efficient cause of everything. He says, because everything is born of me, I am the original source of all, everything is under me. No one is above me. There is no supreme controller other than Krishna. One who understands Krishna is in such a way from a bona fide spiritual master which references the Vedic literature, engages all his energy in Krishna consciousness and becomes a truly learned man. In comparison to him, all others who do not know Krishna properly are but fools. Only a fool would consider Krishna to be an ordinary man. A Krishna conscious person should not be bewildered by fools. He should avoid all unauthorized commentaries and interpretations on Bhagavad Gita and proceed in Krishna consciousness with determination and firmness.
So there are many, many different statements right throughout the Vedas and the Puranas declaring Krishna to be Narayan, and that everything is coming from the Personality of Godhead, and that gradually by hearing that from the proper authorities, the Vedas as they are, without interpretation, one becomes perfect in knowledge, that person becomes fixed up in devotional service, and gradually through devotional service they develop their love more and more. And then it says, then one is able to see the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. So as that love reaches perfection, one can actually see the Lord face to face. Although the Lord is unlimited, by his causeless mercy, he becomes visible to the devotee, who is then able to see him. In our present position of conditioned life, we cannot see or understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So as we progress in devotional service, both our understanding and our full assimilation and realization of that understanding becomes manifest, and we can directly perceive the presence of the Personality of Godhead in every aspect of creation and maintenance and annihilation and our existence, and then gradually one can also see him face to face as well. Yathā śrī kṛṣṇa mādīnā bhavegraṁ indriyā śevan mukhaya hi jīvado svayam evās parachyadā. No one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality and pastimes of Sri Krishna through his materially contaminated senses. Only when one becomes spiritually saturated by transcendental service to the Lord are the transcendental name, form, qualities and pastimes of the Lord revealed to him. If one takes to spiritual life under the direction of Narada Muni or his representatives, and thus engages himself in the service of the Lord, he qualifies himself to see the Lord face to face. The Brahma Samhita 5.38 states, Ramanjana charita bhakti valochinina santasa deva hudayasya valokiyanti yam shama sundra machincha guna svarupam govinda maripurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotees whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Shama Shundra, situated within the heart of the devotee. One must follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Then one becomes qualified and later sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead as evinced by Maharaj Chitraketu. So, you know, when we know that the Lord is within our heart, but generally when we think of the Lord within our heart, we think of Shama Shundra. Text number 51. All living entities, moving and non-moving, are my expansions and are separate from me. I am the supersoul of all living beings who exist because I manifest them. I am the form of the transcendental vibrations like Omkara and Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, and I am the Supreme Absolute Truth. These two forms of mind, namely the transcendental sound and the eternally blissful spiritual form of the deity, are my eternal forms. They are not material. So, so Prabhupada says, by performing devotional service, one advances step by step, and when one is on the platform of love of God, he sees the Supreme Lord at every moment. As stated in the Gita, when one engages in devotional service 24 hours a day, Tesham Sadaryuktanam, in accordance with the instructions of the spiritual master, his devotional service becomes more and more pleasing. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is within the core of everyone's heart, speaks to the devotee, the Dharmi Buddha Yogam. And he explains how this happened to Chitraketu. The essence of knowledge is that there are two kinds of vastu or substance. One is real and the other, being illusory or temporary, is sometimes called non-factual. One must consider these two kinds of existence. The real tattva or truth consists of Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. The categories of emanations from the non-substance are two: activities and forbidden activities, or karma and vikarma. Karma refers to the pious life of material activities performed during the day and mental activities of dreams at night. These are more or less desired activities. Vikarma, however, refers to illusory activities, which is something like the will-o'-the-wisp. These are activities that have no meaning. For example, modern scientists imagine that life can be produced from chemical combinations, and they're very busy trying to prove this in laboratories throughout the world. Although no one in history has been able to produce the substance of life from material combinations. Such activities are called vikarma. Another foolish activity they do is, they trying to go back to the beginning of the creation of the universe. And by going back to the beginning, they would then, understand how creation took place. And it will give them, complete understanding of the workings of the universe by finding that original. So they have estimated that the universe began 4.5 billion years ago. Do you know how they come to that? That's the official scientific date of the universe. Do you know how they come to that? Does anyone know? What they did was, as we know, you can measure time by the movements of the sun because it has a fixed sort of, you can set your watch to it. Its movements are very concise and they repeat. Exactly. You can also measure time according to the atomic movements. So there's an element called uranium, and its atomic structure over, in consecutive set timing of movement of the, protons and neutrons separating from the nucleus, the uranium gradually breaks down into lead. So if you measure the amount of lead in some substance, you can measure the atomic time it took for that quantity to manifest from the similar quantity of uranium. So therefore they can measure like that. So there's one scientist who that he was asked to derive that measurement of the beginning of the earth. Anyway, the beginning of the earth. I think the earth, not the universe, but the earth itself is 4.5 billion years. Yeah, the earth. But they say that basically that brings you back pretty much to the beginning of the universe because it all come from that Big Bang. So that's pretty close to the beginning of the universe, and the Earth was formed at that time at the beginning of the universe. So what they did was they were trying to measure the amount of lead in the rock, and this scientist found that there was so much contamination of lead in the atmosphere that it was giving a false reading. So he created the first, laboratory in which, they wear the suits and there's not like a speck of dust in there. He created the first one so that when you're in there, there's nothing else except that element you're trying to measure, and everything is decontaminated. And that's how he was the one who found that there was so much contamination in the atmosphere, and he found that it was coming from the lead in petrol, and it took him 20 years of court cases to actually get them to remove the lead from the petrol, and basically that came from this same scientist. And the oil companies had similar scientists trying to prove him to be wrong. But anyway, that's where this fellow says he's quite famous, but he's a very humble person. But anyway, he in that laboratory, they said that because the other matter that's scattered in the universe, such as the meteorites, they have the same age as Earth, and they would have less contamination. So if you measure them, so he measured the lead, derived from uranium in the meteorites, and he got the age of Earth is 4.5 billion years. So that's the official scientific. But of course, we say, you know, that this is the first day of the second half of Brahma's life, and our Brahma lives for 3 and 11 trillion years, and the Earth was there, and although it, you know, comes back, it gets submerged every now and then. But basically, we date it to about half of 3.5 trillion. Anyone know that off the top of their head? But I mean, if just to give you an idea, how many billion in 1 trillion? So there's 311 trillion years. Is how many billion in how many, you know, what's that?
1,000 billion.
1,000 billion in 1 trillion. So, but they're saying it's only 4 billion. It's nowhere near, you know, not even near 1 trillion, let alone half of 311 trillion. So you can see the difference that we would, you know, challenge. You know, our calculations are quite different from yours. You know, as Prabhupada's giving, Vikkhama, you know, the illusory, you know, will-o'-the-wisp sort of activities that they're doing.
Yeah. 311 trillion, because it's like the other half is night. Is that the reason why we do it? Other half is Brahma's night.
Brahma's day, entire duration of life, is 311 trillion years. His nights and days and everything, his whole 100 years, 311. So it's about 165 trillion years. It would be, you know, the first time the Earth was created within this universe. Somewhere back there at the beginning of Brahma's day, and then it gets submerged and like that, but it's going back a long time, really, isn't it?
So that's the age of the universe, actually, and not just 4 billion, which is like
all the. Yeah, they're saying the Earth is about the same age as the universe, so, you know, their calculations are way off. It's really will o' the wisp sort of thing. It's just, you know. So, you know, so there's karma. So there's Vastu has two aspects. One is real, which means Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan, that there's actually substance there. That's, and another form of substance, or non-substance, is material. And there's karma, sort of activities which you're allowed to perform, and then other activities which you're not supposed to be performing, which is a waste of time. All material activities are actually illusory, and progress in illusion is simply a waste of time. These illusory activities are called akarya, and one must learn of them from the instructions of the personality of Godhead. So, you know, in this translation, basically Krishna is saying that all living entities, moving and non-moving, they're coming from me, you know, through his different energies, material and spiritually. He's the super soul, so he's actually substance. And when he manifests his form as, you know, in two ways in this world, as Omkara or in sound vibration, Om or Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, or in the deity form, they're actually part of the transcendental substance. They're not part of the illusory substance. So that's the essence of it. And so he says, going, you know, skipping ahead through the paragraphs, that when one is actually on the platform of Vidya, he can personally understand the personality of Godhead in his forms like those of Lord Rama, Lord Krishna, and Lord Sankarshan. The Vedic knowledge is described as the breathing of the Supreme Lord, and activities begin on the basis of Vedic knowledge. Therefore, the Lord says that when he endeavours or breathes, the material universes come into existence and various activities gradually develop. Text number 52. In this world of matter, which the conditioned soul accepts as consisting of enjoyable resources, the conditioned soul expands, thinking that he is the enjoyer of the material world. Similarly, the material world expands in the living entity as a source of enjoyments. In this way, they both expand, but because they are my energies, they are both pervaded by me. As the Supreme Lord, I am the cause of these effects, and one should know that both of them rest in me. So just to clarify what Sankarshan is saying there, we get the benefit of Prabhupada's purports. He says the Mayavadi philosopher sees everything as being equal in quality with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the Supreme Brahman, and therefore sees everything as worshipable. This dangerous theory of the Mayavadi school has turned people in general toward atheism. On the strength of this theory, one thinks that he is God, but this is not a fact, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. The fact is that the entire cosmic manifestation is an expansion of the Supreme Lord's energies, which are manifested in the physical elements and the living entities. The living entities wrongly consider the physical elements to be resources meant for their enjoyment, and they think themselves to be enjoyers. However, neither of them is independent. They are both energies of the Lord. The original cause for the material energy and spiritual energy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, although the expansion of the Lord's energies is the original cause, one should not think that the Lord himself has expanded in different ways. To condemn the theories of the Mayavadis, the Lord clearly says in Bhagavad Gita, Matstani Sava Bhutani, Najaham Tesravastita, all beings are in me, but I am not in them. Everything rests upon him, and everything is but expansion of his energies, but this does not mean that everything is as worshipable as the Lord himself. The material expansion is temporary, but the Lord is not temporary. The living entities in this material world are not inconceivable, but the Lord is. The theory that the Lord's energies being expansions of the Lord are as good as the Lord is mistaken. So the Lord has many qualities which are not found in the living entities or the material energy, and therefore there are many supreme and inconceivable qualities far greater than what is found within the Lord's the energy of the living entities and the energy of the material energy. So therefore the Lord is far superior in quality and quantity ultimately. So I think we're at about 65, so we're almost coming to the end of this chapter. Very nice. Here, of course, you know, when we talk about hearing from the authorities, we're hearing from Lord Sankarshan himself. It's a wonder we can understand it. But that's his benediction that, you know, if you want to enter into the mysteries of his understanding, he allows that. He says, when a person is in deep sleep, he dreams and sees himself Many other objects, such as mountains and rivers, or perhaps even the entire universe, although they are far away. Sometimes when one awakens from a dream, he sees that he is a human being in a human form lying in his bed in one place. Then he sees himself in terms of various conditions as belonging to a particular nationality, family, and so on. All the conditions of deep sleep, dreaming, and wakefulness are but energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should always remember the original creator of these conditions, the Supreme Lord, who is unaffected by them. So, of course, we are affected by certain conditions, dreaming, sleep, and wakefulness. We're affected and controlled by those conditions. So that means that there is a greater power that's producing those conditions which are controlling us. And that proves that there is a greater power for the Supreme Lord. Purport. None of these conditions of the living entities, namely deep sleep, dreaming, and wakefulness, is substantial. They are simply displays of various phases of conditional life. There may be many mountains, rivers, trees, bees, tigers, and snakes that are situated far away, but in a dream one may imagine them to be nearby. Similarly, as one has subtle dreams at night, when the living entity is awake, he lives in gross dreams of nation, community, society, possessions, skyscrapers, bank balance, position and honour. Under the circumstances, one should know that his position is due to his contact with the material world. One is situated in different positions in various forms of life that are all but creations of the illusory energy which works under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the ultimate actor, and the conditioned living entity should simply remember this original actor, Sri Krishna. All living entities are being carried away by the waves of prakriti, or nature, which works under the Lord's direction. The Bhaktivinoda Thakura has this nice song. Why are you being carried away by the waves of the illusory energy in various phases of dreaming and wakefulness? These are all creations of Maya. Our only duty is to remember the Supreme Director and this illusory energy, Krishna. Our only duty is to remember the Supreme Director of this illusory energy, Krishna. For us to do this, the Shastra advises, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam. One should constantly chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the human form of life, one should understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for then one will understand everything else. According to this Vedic injunction, simply by understanding Krishna, one understands Brahman, Paramatma, Prakriti, the illusory energy, the spiritual energy, and everything else. Everything will be revealed. Prakriti, the material nature, is working under the direction of the Supreme Lord, and we living entities are being carried away by the various phases of Prakriti. For self-realization, one should always remember Krishna. As stated in Padma Purana, Smartabhya Satatam Vishnu, we should always remember Lord Vishnu. Vishmatabhyona Jatutit, we should never forget the Lord. This is the perfection of life. So it's, you know, as devotees, of course, we have quite a different view of, you know, what is happening to us at any different stage of our life. So, for instance, if we're in wakefulness, we're seeing that we're in a dreamlike state while we're awake. So we've accepted this temporary material body. This is not really my identity. There are so many different relationships and activities going on. It's all illusory. They have nothing to do with me as a spirit soul. I belong in the spiritual world. I have no business here. All the things which I think are my important things for me to gain, all the things which I'm lamenting about for my losses, they really have nothing to do. They don't affect me as a spirit soul whatsoever. And my real business of what I should be doing in the spiritual world, I'm forgetting of that. So it's like a person in a dreamlike state. You know, when you're dreaming, you know, what you're supposed to do in your active, you know, awakened state, you've forgotten about. Even to the point where your house could be burning down and you're just dreaming, you know. You might be dreaming and by a campfire, you're hearing the crackling of wood and, you know, you might be, the karmis might be thinking, we'll put a marshmallow on the bonfire. And what's actually happening is your house is burning down, you should be running for your life. See? So, in a similar way, we're engaged in all these things, but what's actually happening is we're in the cycle of birth and death. We should be running for our life, getting out of here. See, it's like a dreamlike forgetfulness. You know, of what, you know, what are we doing here? Why am I taking this as important? Get out of here. So we see the world in a really different way. At the same time, it's you know, this is one of the, especially as a preacher, you know, you sort of have to play the role. So everyone, you know, the other conditioned souls are looking at you in a particular way, and you sort of have to, you know, reciprocate with the way the world is looking at you as well. So, you know, you may be sitting there thinking, I have no business here except to remember Krishna and get out of this cycle of birth and death and develop my love for God and go back to Godhead. And that, you know, but if you're with your mother, if you're with your friend, if you're with your wife, if you're with your children, you have to interact with them. And they're seeing you, you know, here's my father, here's my wife, here's my friend. You know, the boss, you know, here's my wig. So on the one hand, you're sort of, you know, going along with the dreamlike state, but within your consciousness, you never ever forget that it's just, you know, you don't get carried away with it yourself. Because, and how do you do that? You always remember Krishna. As soon as you remember Krishna, you remember everything else. Remember Krishna, oh, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. That means the spirit soul, not the body. I belong to the spiritual world. It all comes back. Here's the material energy. That's Maya trying to get me. Here's an agent of Maya coming at me.
First time I understood this dreamlike state. I have never understood it before.
Yeah. There you go. That's good.
I've never understood it before.
Yeah, it's good not to skip over things. Even if things have been explained many times, sometimes you can sometimes say it just a little differently.
I've never understood it.
When I give class, I'm actually preaching to myself, and I like to hear the same philosophy. I like to try and say it in a different way each time. I know Prabhupada used to do that, because I'm hoping the penny will drop with me as well. But it does, you know, if you sort of go over it. Well, that's nice. I'm glad to hear that. He says, know me to be the Supreme Brahman, the all-pervading super soul through whom the sleeping living entity can understand his dreaming condition and his happiness beyond the activities of the material senses. That is to say, I am the cause of the activities of the sleeping being. So there's a little message, Nirmala. Krishna is saying to you, Sankarshan is saying to you, know me to be the Supreme Brahman, the all-pervading super soul through whom you have just understood this dreaming condition and your happiness beyond the activities of the material senses. That's what he's saying. He says, hello. So that's Sankarshan saying, hello, Nirmala. That's what, you know, Prabhupada says that. He says, you know, one day, you know, through your devotional activities, then you'll realize that Krishna is saying, here I am. I'm the person who just gave you that understanding. That is to say, I am the cause of the activities of the sleeping being. But, you know, not just Nirmala, but, you know, here I am, Suri Gopal. Here I am, Anantagirya. Here I am, Gangeshwar. Here I am, Jamuna Jivan, Janavi Jivan, and your husband. So when the living entity becomes free from the false ego, he understands his superior position as a spirit soul, part and parcel of the pleasure potency of the Lord. Thus, due to Brahman, even while sleeping, the living entity can enjoy. The Lord says, that Brahman, that Paramatma and Bhagavan are I myself. This is noted by Śrīla Jīva Goswami in his Krama Sandarbha. So that's an interesting, you know, Prabhupada says that the spirit soul is part and parcel of the pleasure potency of the Lord. Translation of text number 56. In general, you can take that statement being part and parcel of the pleasure potency of the Lord, that the Lord expands the living entities ultimately to increase the ananda, to expand his pleasure potency, to expand the transcendental bliss of spiritual existence. And he expands that by through the living entities, and each living entity, part of his part and parcel of his pleasure potency, reciprocates with the Lord and expands his bliss. So each living entity has a unique ability to expand the happiness of the Lord, each and every one of us, in our own unique individual ways. And therefore, you know, there's no need for envy and jealousy on the spiritual level. You know, when a devotee, if a devotee is acting enviously and jealously, it's because they haven't understood that they're a spirit soul properly. They're still identifying the material body. Mm-hmm. As a material body, you know, there are limitations due to sense gratification and availability. But on the spiritual platforms, you understand, I'm a spirit soul, I have a unique ability to serve Krishna in such a way to expand his happiness. There is no other spiritual world, spiritual being in existence who can do what I can. That is the way we are created. Therefore, what is a question of jealousy and envy? There's no need for it. When you understand that, if you do your devotional service and your spiritual qualities become manifest because you become purified from the material condition, that means if you cook prasadam, you'll cook it differently, even if you cook in the same khichdi as someone else. But if you cook, I still remember khichdis, I remember Ranuka Sutra's khichdi, I remember Gyana Samudra's khichdi, I remember Korma's khichdi. You might think, oh, I've been eating khichdi for nearly 40 years or whatever. But I remember, you know, when that devotee cooked khichdi, that it had a certain, a certain quality like that. You cook the same preparation. Devotees dress the deities every morning. Someone dresses the deities, but each devotee, you can say, oh, that was bhakti, that was bhakti. Each devotee do kirtan. Oh, Hare Krishna again, Hare Krishna every time. But every time someone, each devotee does a kirtan, no one can do like that. They have a unique, even in, while we're in this material body, if they're purified, you cannot, take away that individual quality of devotional service and the flavour of, bhakti that you taste through, in that devotee's service like that. So, where's the question of being jealous? As if someone's doing something that I wanted to do. You couldn't do it anyway, because you'd have to be that person.
It's interesting, Prabhu. Many devotees ask them for certain recipes, they don't give it.
No.
Thinking that, this person will cook for Guru Maharaj like I'm cooking. So
exactly.
They don't want to give.
But actually, they can't do it. And the indication is there is that your Guru Maharaj, couldn't tell when you've cooked the something and someone else has cooked. They know you're cooking.
So, basically, it means there's no question of comparison because it's everyone's unique ability and.
Yeah, there's a Krishna tastes the bhakti in your activities. He tastes the love. That's what he does. When you have the khichdi, he tastes the love is given it a special flavour that no other, that love is unique to you. A parent can have all different children, but they all love the parents, but there's a unique flavour that each one gives. That's why men choose one, and women choose one partner. There may be so many different million, other women or men, but there is a unique quality of love which none other can give. Now, if someone's on the platform of just, sense gratification, then, they can't taste the love, which is the unique quality, then, that is one woman, another woman, what's the difference? All sex. in one's dreams, during sleep, are merely subject matters witnessed by... If one's dreams during sleep are merely subject matters witnessed by the supersoul, how can the living entity, who is different from the supersoul, remember the activities of his dreams? The experiences of one person cannot be understood by another. Therefore, the knower of the facts, the living entity, who inquires into the incidences manifested in dreams and wakefulness, is different from the circumstantial activities. That knowing factor is Brahman. In other words, the quality of knowing belongs to the living entities and to the Supreme Soul. Thus, the living entity can also experience the activities of dreams and wakefulness. In both stages, the knower is unchanged, but is qualitatively one with the Supreme Brahman. Purport. In knowledge, the living entity is qualitatively one with the Supreme Brahman. But the quantity of the Supreme Brahman is not the same as that of the living entity who is part of Brahman. Because the living entity is Brahman in quality, he can remember his past activities of dreams and also know the present activities of wakefulness. So we are a knower. One, we are certainly not the Paramatma because in wakefulness, we're experiencing this dreamlike life, which is not our eternal life. It's temporary, which tends to make us forget our actual fully awakened condition in the spiritual world. But we haven't created this world that we're experiencing in our wakeful dream. And nor do we experience, you know, the subtle things which come to us on the astral plane when we're dreaming. We know that all of those things, we know that they're there, but someone else has created those conditions, and higher powers are controlling those conditions of, you know, that we're experiencing in sleep and wakefulness. So there's a difference between us, but we are still a knower. And because someone is in control of our wakeful state, there is a knower of the entire conditions that we know about the material world. But there is someone controlling the material world who also knows about it. Otherwise, how could they control it? In our wakeful state, you know, I know how I'm feeling now, but I don't know how Surya Gopal is feeling. I don't know how Nanda, you know, but the Super Soul does. So there are two knowers. You know, in another sense, you know, I live in Australia. I am a knower of my circumstances in Australia. I certainly may not have as, you know, if we take the government, you know, personalities, they are also knowers, but they know far greater, and their controlling power over the conditions and circumstances in Australia are far greater than mine. And because I see that in Australia there are things that are being controlled and, you know, coordinated, I know that there must be another knower, you know, with greater knowledge than mine, like that. So then you just expand that the universe is also like being governed and controlled. So there must be greater knowers of this circumstances. I'm aware of it, but there are greater knowers. Ultimately, the greatest knower is the Super Soul, knows the whole universe. The whole material creation, like that. So we understand there are two knowers. Therefore, we have the same quality, but the knowing capacity is a different quantity. When a living entity thinking himself different from me forgets his spiritual identity of qualitative oneness with me, in eternity, knowledge and bliss, his material condition of life begins. In other words, instead of identifying his interest with mine, he becomes interested in his bodily expansions like his wife, children and material possessions. In this way, by the influence of his actions, one body comes from another, and after one death, another death takes place. So here, keep in mind, we're trying, the Sankarshan is defeating this Mayavadi nonsense, impersonalism. He's really trying to, you know, help philosophically understand, everyone to understand that he exists as a personality of Godhead. And to think that God is without, is not the personality of Godhead, but just the impersonal Brahman is nonsense. It doesn't, that philosophy does not tally with the way we exist in this world. So we've had the example that there are two knowers. So we are one qualitatively. We're transcendental to the body. And that is shown because when we're asleep, we perceive a whole existence, and then when we wake up, if we were the body and the mind, when we wake up, we should be a different person in a different life. It's like that, you see? If we were the body and the mind, the dream body we had in our sleep should be us. But when we wake, we're, you know, that dream body, you know, is different. So for instance, you know, sometimes we may dream. You ever had a dream where a young boy again or a young girl? You ever had that dream? You ever dreamt and you're, you know, younger or older? Huh? You guys really got to catch up with your dreams, I tell you, you know. I remember Bhakti Sar come up to me one day. He goes, "Ganga, you know, I just don't have any dreams." And I said, "Look, what you got to do is as soon as you wake up, the second you wake up, you got to remember what you dream. If you wait a couple of seconds, it's gone. And if you do it and write it down, if you do that for a couple of weeks, you'll start remembering your dreams. And you'll be surprised. You'll be having all sorts of transcendental dreams you're probably not even forgetting about. But anyway, that's how you do it. You get it as soon as you wake up, and you'll be surprised. It's, you know, it's quite fascinating for devotees because, you know, all sorts of transcendental things can happen to you in your dreams. But they are... It's helpful to understand this philosophy too, if you sort of... You know, but... If we were the dream body, it really didn't exist, did it? Because when you wake up, you know, that if we were the that dream body, when we wake up, our dream body is gone. We should be a different person. But we weren't that dream body. But we remember having that body. So there's an identity that's constant. And the same, even in this wakeful body, as mentioned in the Gita, there's this change from boyhood to youth to old age. Again, we're changing bodies. We should be a different person, but we're the same person. We can remember, I've had a little body, it's gone, all the cells and atoms in that body, they're all gone, I'm the same person. So, you know, through sleep, dreaming, wakefulness, you can perceive that we are different from the body. Therefore, we're Brahman. We're one with God, who is described... We're one with Brahman, which is described as, you know, chit or conscious, a knower. But not one in quantity. That doesn't tally, because I know... My body, you know, your body, the super soul knows the whole material creation and controlling that, and the know within all living entities. So, this is what he is describing. Now, but when we forget, so Prabhupada starts off, he says, generally, the Mayavadi philosophers are persons influenced by Mayavadi philosophies, think themselves as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the cause of their conditioned life. He quotes the Vaishnava poet Jagannanda Pandit, Krishna Bahimukha Hanaboga Vancha Kare Nikitasta Maya Tare Japatiya Dare. As soon as a living entity forgets his constitutional position and endeavours to become one with the Supreme Brahman, with the Supreme, his conditional life begins. So as soon as we forget, you know, I'm the eternal, I'm a spirit soul, part and parcel of the Lord's energy, and therefore the servant of the Lord, his energies are always engaged in his service, I'm part and parcel of one of those energies, therefore I'm the servant of the Lord. You forget that. As soon as you forget that, and then the endeavor is, I want to be him. I want to be the central enjoyer like that. The condition of life begins immediately like that. The conception that Supreme Brahman and the living entity are equal, not only in quality, but in quantity, is the cause of conditional life. If one forgets the difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entity, his conditional life begins. And conditional life means giving up one body to accept another and undergoing death, to accept death again. The Mayavadi philosophy teaches the philosophy of Tattvam Asi, saying, you are the same as God. He forgets that Tattvam Asi applies in terms of the marginal position of the living entity, who is like sunshine. There is heat and light in the sun, and there is heat and light in the sunshine, and thus they are qualitatively one. But one should not forget that the sunshine rests on the sun. As the Lord says in Gita, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, I am the original source of Brahman. The sunshine is important because of the presence of the sun globe. It is not that the sun globe is important because of the all-pervasiveness of the sunshine. Forgetfulness and misunderstanding of this fact is called maya, because of forgetfulness of one's constitutional position and that of the Supreme Lord, one comes into maya or samsara, conditional life. The Madhvacharya says, when one thinks that the living entity is non-different in all respects from the Supreme Lord, there is no doubt that he is in ignorance. You have no doubt about that. So, a human being can attain perfection in life, this is text 58, by self-realization through the Vedic literature and its practical application. This is possible especially for a human being born in India, the land of piety. Oh, there you go. That's where it's quoted. Is it, where's that? Lava Iha. Prabhupada is saying, especially in this pious land of Bharatvarsh, India. A man who obtains birth in such a convenient position but does not understand himself is unable to achieve the highest perfection, even if he is exalted to life in the higher planetary systems. Remembering the great trouble found in the field of activities performed for fruitive results, and remembering how one receives the reverse of the results one desires, whether from material activities or from the fruit of activities recommended in the Vedic literatures, an intelligent man should cease from the desire for fruit of actions, for by such endeavours one cannot achieve the ultimate goal of life. On the other hand, if one acts without desires for fruitive results, in other words, if one engages in devotional activities, he can achieve the highest goal of life with freedom from material conditions. Considering this, one should cease from material desires. As a husband and wife, a man and a woman plan together to attain happiness and decrease unhappiness, working jointly in many ways, but because their activities are full of desires, these activities are never a source of happiness and they never diminish distress. On the contrary, they are a great cause of unhappiness. One should understand that the activities of persons who are proud of the material experience bring only results contradictory to those such persons conceive while awake, sleeping, and deeply sleeping. One should further understand that the spirit soul, although very difficult for the materialist to perceive, is above all these conditions, and by the strength of one's discrimination, one should give up the desire for fruitive results in the present life and in the next, thus becoming experienced in transcendental knowledge. One should become my devotee. Persons who try to reach the ultimate goal of life must expertly observe the Supreme Absolute Person and the living entity, who are one in quality in their relationship as part and whole. This is the ultimate understanding of life. There is no better truth than this. O King, if you accept this condition of mind, being unattached to material enjoyment, adhering to me with great faith, and thus becoming proficient and fully aware of knowledge and its practical application in life, you will achieve the highest perfection by attaining me. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, after thus instructing Chitraketu and assuring him of perfection in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Spiritual Master, the Supreme Soul, Sankarshan, disappeared from that place as Chitraketu looked on. And this Sankarshan and his humble servant are also about to disappear, and thus ends another class of Bhaktivaibhava. All right. All right, so next week we will do the whole of chapter 17, and that finishes what we need to know to do the next exam, which we will discuss, you know, next week. So next week we'll discuss what we do about Diwali, where we skip a class or meet up for some purposes or you know, for reading or what have you.
But wasn't there an exam right after we finish the canto, or we have one before that?
No, the next couple of chapters won't be in the test that we're doing, but we will do, we'll read through them after the exam. But I want to get the exam done just in case people are going overseas or this, that or the other, and then it gives the best opportunity for everyone to do it. There are, in the next chapter, there are 41 texts, and I would like to finish it next week, so please come early. We'll get an early start, finish it off, and then we'll discuss. We won't be having an exam on Diwali. It'll be after that. But whether there's a meeting on Diwali for, I don't know, essays or this, that or the other, you know, we'll discuss that next week. Yeah. All right? Thank you very much.
Yeah, no. Competition.
Yes, bring them in. Yeah.